everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, off and running midweek edition. First full week of March. Today is Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2024. Tom, one of the few islands, I can't really say that I haven't been to the island that Haiti shares with the Dominican Republic. The island is called Hispaniola. So I've been to Dominican Republic, but not Haiti. And just from what I just heard on CBS, the network news, Haiti is a basket case. It's complete anarchy.
So Hispaniola, the island, is what, divided vertically with Haiti on one side Republic on the other
side? Haiti to the west, Dominican Republic to the right of a very large island, Hispaniola.
So I wonder if the people of the Dominican Republic are calling for a wall to be built.
I don't know, but boy, I don't know how they're going to, what kind of even a peace force you would put together, because it's just like the inmates are running the asylum. All the prisoners have been released. I don't know. Anyway, we're in our 14th year with our radio program, coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. And we've got five radio stations under one roof here. This is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, which is also the place for 13 full years of content that is archived for you very conveniently with the archive and all of those podcasts. We have our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the Award 6 City of Tucson Democrat Councilman Steve Kasacek. Councilman, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Congratulations on solving the Haiti problem there.
I don't know what kind of a peace force you would need. I think it'd have to be a really big one.
I think your description is an understatement, anarchy in a basket case.
Yeah,
it's just
really
sad, because there are people there who are legitimately suffering. And frankly, we're seeing some people at the they're part of the group that we're seeing at the border. People coming from Haiti.
Yes.
So it's not as though people are coming here just to find a job. It's because they're dying in their homes.
Yeah, it's really a serious situation. Ward 6 encompasses the University of Arizona and the University of Arizona community, and I know that's one of the reasons you're keeping a very close eye on the fiscal, the money picture, and the issues at the University of Arizona. That shortfall now is, last report I saw was $177 million, something that people may not have heard about. This is just breaking news from Axios, their online news service. The Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, is trying to force UA to pay back loan debt amassed by students who attended the for-profit online Ashford University, which the UA acquired in 2020. Wow, this could really add to the financial issues.
Yeah, so the original number that the Department of Education was pointing to was about $71 million in repayment of loans. And it's because Global Campus, call it Ashford, was lying and misrepresenting to the students when they were recruiting them. And so students signed on to classes and to the tune of about $71 million. The figure that I have most recently seen is that they're now focusing in on a $24, $25 million settlement. The U of A is challenging that, saying that all happened before they were a part of this, before they had bought the school, the online school. The counter to that, though, and the Department of Education is saying, when you bought it, you bought their assets and you bought their liabilities.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're saying. And so if there's another, even if it's only in quotes, $25 million extra, that bumps the shortfall up over $200 million again. Sadly, this has really morphed into more than just a question of dollars and cents. This is now an absolute credibility issue for Bobby Robbins and the NABOR, They've had a changing of the guards at ABOR last week. Fred Duvall, who is the chair, stepped down. He had earlier in the week gotten into a lawyering up process with the chair of the U of A Faculty Senate, because she had alleged that he had some conflicts of interest, and he took exception to that and wanted to start a defamation thing with her. Bobby Robbins was told by the governor that threatening the faculty senate was a bad look and that they needed to work productively. And so what he suggested about the same time Duvall was stepping down was that he would handpick his own faculty set of faculty advisors and effectively bypass the faculty senate and get his own rubber stamp committee in place. And so every step that they take seems to simply throw another log on the fire. And they have issues of credibility. They have issues of misrepresenting, you know, for instance, when he said the CFO, Lisa Rolney, he had accepted her resignation. In fact, she had moved across the hall with the same rate of pay. The same kind of thing happened when, when the Board of Regents steps up and says that they're interested in productive conversations, and then all of a sudden they're suing the faculty senate chair. So Katie Hobbs is meeting with the governor, is meeting with Robbins and his team today, and he voluntarily took a 10% pay cut the day before that meeting. That's fine. But he's still getting significant benefits in terms of a free house and a car allowance and roughly $171 million each year poured into his retirement plan, plus about an $850,000 annual salary. So that's, you know, it's a situation where he has effectively broken ties with the community, with the faculty senate, with large numbers of the faculty who are not a member of that group, with student groups, and now with the governor. So if you're following Crisis Management 1A, this is really not the way to try and manage a financial crisis. And frankly, and I've been pretty upfront saying that I think, you know, the problem is that Robbins needs to step aside. He might have been a great heart surgeon. But he is not a good manager of other people's money. He knows how to spend it well, but he doesn't know how to manage it. And the same is true of the people he surrounds himself with. One of the other things that the faculty folks are irritated about is that he's got a half a dozen or more people who are making $500,000 a year or more. It's a public sector institution. It's a college. And I worked there for 32 years, and I may have been naive the whole time, but I never for a second thought that people across campus working out of Old Main were making $500,000-$700,000 a year to help administer the university. It's way over the top, and I'm certainly hopeful that the governor lays down the law today. And I don't know what her authority is in terms of making changes at ABOR, because those people are chosen for 8-year terms. But I would think that she could certainly put the pressure on Robbins to say, listen, you're an embarrassment. You're an embarrassment to the community. You're an embarrassment nationally. This is getting national news through the Chronicle of Higher Education and through Inside Higher Education. The publications are writing about the U of A all over the country. The athletics department just hired a new AD for $1 million a year and a new football coach for $5 million contract for Bobby Lloyd, and the rest of campus is saying you're doing hiring freezes and salary freezes.
So all right, before
it's a bad look all over.
And before we take the break, I do want to say, folks may be wondering, well, why is this important? Well, we may have layoffs and cuts of what, up 10-15% of the campus community.
Correct.
You're a council person who represents that area. You know what the economic impact of the University of Arizona. It's one of the drivers of this economy. If it starts bleeding, the Tucson economy is going to bleed as well.
That's right. We have a few major economic drivers. You got the U of A, we got Raytheon, and that's sitting right in the middle of Ward 6. Robbins has asked for potential budget cuts of 5 to 10 to 15%. If people are laid off, their spending discretionary income goes to zero overnight, and that's going to affect all the local businesses that surround campus. It's going to affect the housing industry. We've already got a homelessness situation going on. People can't pay their rent, can't pay their utilities. It's a cascading effect. And so the mismanagement of one of the major economic drivers in the city of Tucson has a domino effect throughout our economy. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so focused on it right now and encouraging Katie Hobbs to get the right person in the saddle over there.
All right, we're going to take a break right now. Something I want to focus on, Steve Kasachek, and you know what it is. It's Mona's Danish Bakery. There is an enhancement. I don't know if you've heard the news, Steve, about the liquor license. They applied, it was granted, and they are now utilizing it. So beer, champagne, wine. You can do the mimosas in breakfast with the wine and orange juice. Or right now, they're open for lunch. You could do a beer with your lunch. They've got some great sandwiches. Steve, it's just an additional enhancement that the team wanted to offer to the people of Tucson.
Well, I think it's great. And, you know, we hear that from businesses and small local restaurants all the time. In fact, there's a vegan deli over on Rosemont and Fifth who got a liquor license. And it's not because they want to hold, you know, blowout parties. It's because when people come in and want to get something like you just described at Mona's, then sit down and have a beer or a glass of wine with your meal. It's nothing problem. No harm, no foul.
MonasDanishBakery.com is their website. They're located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Councilman Steve Kasachek right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. We're speaking with Councilman Steve Kasachek, Ward 6 Democrat. Are we going to continue with free bus and streetcar rides in the city of Tucson, Steve Kasachek?
Well, so what happened yesterday was that Nikki Lee had made a council member from Ward 4. Made a motion to begin an analysis. We're required by law to do it. It's called the Title VI analysis. Anytime you change bus fares or transit fares, it's required by the Federal Transportation Administration, the FTA. Nikki made a motion to initiate the analysis. I seconded the motion. Let's have the conversation. Let's begin the process. It takes 4 to 5 to 6 months to finish the process anyway. I happened to get a phone call right in the middle of the discussion, stepped outside, and one of the staff people came outside and said, hey, you need to come back in because Nikki just rescinded her motion, and because I had seconded it, I needed to approve of the rescinding. So you asked if we're going to institute fares. My guess, based on the dynamics of this mayor and council, is that no, not anytime soon. The city manager has made it very clear that that is costing us about $12 to $13 million a year. The only thing we were talking about doing yesterday was resuming the fares for the streetcar and some express routes. That would have yielded a couple of million dollars at tops, more like $1.5 million. And this council didn't even have the interest in trying to even chip away at the deficit that we're seeing. And Bill, this is important not just because of bus fares and streetcar fares, but by the way, the reason streetcar was highlighted was because we reached out to the U of A and said we did a survey. Roughly 70% of the ridership on the streetcar are students, faculty, or staff who are using the streetcar to get to campus or get from campus to downtown. And the reality is they're spending more at O'Malley's downtown than they are that they would pay for the fare to get on the streetcar. So I was going to support the move. Nikki walked away from it. It'll be back on March 19th. But what I was going to say is the reason this is important is from our budget standpoint, we're taking about a $27.5 million hit this year because of the state flat tax that went into effect. That number is going to increase next year. We could be facing something like a $40 million deficit next year. We are also facing this issue with immigration. The Congress failed to adopt an immigration bill 3 weeks ago, and so the funding is going to run out. That's costing the county roughly $1 million a week. We are not going to be able to do nothing when we have 800 or 900 people dropped off on street corners by Border Patrol here in the next 4 or 5 weeks. And so it's going to cost us something, and that's going to be coming out of pocket. So those the flat tax and the whole immigration bill failure are not things that we asked to have dumped in our lap. So I think it's unfortunate that this council didn't even have the interest in this issue to let the process begin. We can look at other funding sources while that process is playing itself out, but that shows me that they're not really inclined to reinstitute any kinds of fares.
Steve Kasachek with us, the Ward 6 Democrat on the council. Mike has called us on the live line. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mike, you're with Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Councilor. I wonder if you have any comment on the Stop Cop City animals that use city-owned property to launch their property destruction last weekend.
I'm familiar with it. Stop Cop City is a group that came to us out of Atlanta. They are an anarchist group. They set up shop on what used to be the old Bum Steer, a city-owned property around Stone and Speedway-ish. They broke into the chain link fence and set up shop with RVs and tents and things like that. The police took what, in my opinion, was the correct decision to not go in there and become confrontational. But instead, they made contact with this group and said, let them know that we know you're here. Where you have every right to protest. Anybody has a right to protest. But this group stepped over the line and wound up throwing incendiary devices through a couple of banks' windows, and one of which was shut down, by the way, so it was kind of stupid. Well, the whole thing was stupid, but and so the police started arresting people at that point. I think the police showed great restraint until they started breaking things, and at that point they started making arrests. I'm hopeful that Laura Conover will not treat those as simply as misdemeanors and treat them as serious offenses, and send the message to this group that while we had a sort of measured response this time, you show up again, we're not going to have such a measured response.
Are they still in town?
No, they took off. They moved up to Scottsdale the next day. They were here for a day or two, did their damage, and moved up to the Phoenix area. My concern, though, is that they weren't here just to make a statement, a one-day statement. My concern is that they were here to do some training and recruiting for other similarly anarchistic groups who are not only against police, but they're against basically anything that the government stands for. So I'm hopeful that they didn't leave in their wake smaller kind of smaller groups that are going to carry on their activities.
Okay, Mike, thank you for a good question. The TEP situation, voters said no when last May about TEP putting that voters said that they would like the lines to go underground, but now this TEP thing is still with us.
It still is, and it's coming to a head fairly soon. TEP has a major project that they want to get underway. They want to get it done by year after next. And the challenge is that we have a city ordinance that says any new project on our gateway ordinances, one of which they want to build on, has to go underground. Any new utilities have to go underground. TEP has filed a motion in Superior Court to challenge that ordinance. The court will make that determination. I believe the court will rule in our favor. That means TEP will likely have to find another route and get to the substation that's next to Banner UMC, perhaps by cutting through neighborhoods. It's contentious, and I think the TEP would be wise to say, look, we'll work with you. We'll pick certain parts of the route to go underground, certain parts to go overground, and let's find a solution together instead of fighting this out between attorneys.
There had been talk about maybe the city could have its own electric company. Is that kind of been pushed to the back burner?
I think that is not a realistic proposition at all. The cost of entry into becoming a major utility is just hundreds of millions of dollars, and so that's not something the city does or should do. What we have had a conversation about that I do support is the city setting up small microgrids that are off of the TEP grid, solar panels that can power things such as our water stations or some of our cooling stations, so that we are both reducing the draw on the TEP grid, but we're also setting up resiliency so that if during some of our monsoon seasons the TEP system goes down, we're still able to deliver water. We're still able to have cooling stations that are functional. So that's something I support. But setting up simply setting up a municipal electric utility would be immensely expensive, and I don't think it's a reasonable way to start. Why would we do that? I mean, then we're under the same constraints as the Arizona Corporation Commission that TEP is under. We're competing with the utility that's already made those major investments. Simply doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
So we're 2 months into this year. How are the tourism months, strongest months we've had in a long time? I'm hearing January and February.
Gem Show was very, very successful. Felipe Garcia out at Visit Tucson is very happy with what we're seeing. The revenue per available room, RevPAR rates are about to where they were pre-COVID. And I think that the economy, the local economy from a tourism standpoint is doing well. And, that's encouraging. Sadly, some of the costs that I mentioned earlier, the immigration deal, the flat tax deal, are not in our favor. So we are facing a tough budget year right now. It's even going to be tougher next year.
This dumping of the so-called street release, this is not just a this is a regional problem we could be facing here in a few weeks.
Oh yeah, the county has been managing the logistics largely with reimbursed dollars through the federal government. The federal government failed to adopt a continuation of that funding when they killed the immigration bill a few weeks ago. And let's be honest, that's the Trump wing of the Republican Party and Mike Johnson who basically sent the message out saying kill the bill, because they want to be able to point to chaos in border cities when the election happens in November and blame it on Biden. There was a bipartisan bill that would have continued the funding, and the result is that we're going to have to come out of pocket for continuing to manage this problem that really had a resolution in front of Congress 3 weeks ago.
How is that dog bite recovery for you going quickly?
Doing fine. Was out running about a dozen miles again this morning, so it's all good.
Any advice for folks when they come upon a dog?
Yeah, well, if you get bit, don't wait 4 days like I did before you start antibiotics, because those little suckers have some serious germs in their mouths.
All right, Steve Kosacek, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Take care of yourself.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Midway point of a Buckmaster show loaded with content. Dr. Victoria Mazes from the Weill Center for Integrative Medicine coming up next. What's all this worry about lead contamination in those very popular drinking cups? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Mazes right after this break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster here in the driver's seat. Green Things and Zocalo Village, their sister business, Doing really well, and why not? We're having a beautiful spring, and people are thinking, you know, it is gardening time of the year. I keep up a garden up at the Buckmaster Bungalow, at least try to. Sometimes I get it right. I've still got three poinsettias in the house, in the living room, that are doing well. Actually, I posted a picture on my Facebook page of the biggest one that was a gift from my friend Tim Steller at the Arizona Daily Star, and it's just thriving and gives me some nice color at the bungalow. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. The website's greenthingsaz.com. The sister business is zocalovillage.com for some incredible pottery that they have. Our telephone interview is our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our contributor on health, and we're delighted she is, Dr. Victoria Mazes, the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where Dr. Mazes is a professor of medicine and public health. Internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine, Dr. Mazes is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system challenges. Together with her team at the center, she created and implemented education programs that have trained thousands of physicians, nurses, and other healthcare professionals and impacted the care of millions of people. A highly sought-after speaker, Dr. Mazes is editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes co-hosts with Dr. Weil the popular podcast Body of Wonder. She was named one of the world's 25 intelligent optimists by Ode Magazine. You can find her on her website, and that is over at integrativemedicine.arizona.edu, and you can follow her on X, formerly Twitter, at Dr. Mazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. As they say, hanging in there. Each day is new, of course, a new chapter for me, but it's a blank page, and that can have its interesting possibilities as well. Congratulations to you. The title has changed, founding executive director, but you're very much still involved with the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine.
That is correct.
And I want to talk today about, well, social media. Folks are nervous about the presence of lead in these travel cups, or that there's a popular brand, I think it's called Stanley Cups, that the owner was, or the company has been straightforward in saying the manufacturing process currently employs the use of an industry standard to seal the vacuum insulation at the base of our products. The sealing material includes some lead, and that's got people nervous, Dr. Mazes.
Yeah, you know, lead, of course, is an element. It's on our periodic table, if you remember chemistry from when you were a kid. But lead is actually toxic to our bodies. And even at very low levels, it is toxic. It's more toxic to children, where it can affect their brain development and their IQ, than it is to adults, where it can raise blood pressure and end up in our bones. But it is toxic to all of us.
And there are no safe levels of lead when it comes especially to children. Is that correct?
That is correct. We don't want any lead in children. And so we go out of our way to try and protect all of our citizens, of course, from exposure. And that's the concern, that lead is being used as a way to weld the cups closed and create a vacuum seal. And then it's covered with stainless steel, so the company thinks it should be safe. And I think that's true. It should be safe unless, for some reason, that stainless steel comes off and then there is exposure to lead.
Yeah, and the people with Stanley said that the product that comes into contact with the consumer, nor the contents of the product, does not contain any lead. But you're saying that what if the cup is damaged and somebody's still trying to use it?
Right. And, you know, I mean, I have some things in my home that I like that have a little crack in them, or, you know, that maybe aren't in the pristine condition I first purchased them in. And so I think this is something that we want people to be aware of, because these cups are extremely popular and they're all over the place. You know, we as a society actually have had a lot of regulations put in place over the years to reduce our exposure to lead. So, for example, there used to be lead in paint. And then in 1978, our federal government banned the use of lead-based paint. So you no longer can purchase that kind of paint anymore. But, of course, there are homes, including mine, that were built before 1978. And when the paint chips or cracks, you know, when there is dust, then there can be lead in that dust. Or, you know, sometimes little kids pick up a paint chip and put it in their mouths and they get exposed to lead. So this is still an issue that has not gone away. Another source of exposure that has changed is lead gas. You and I are old enough to remember that gasoline was leaded, and that was banned in 1996. But there were some researchers from Florida State University and also Duke University that said that in total, childhood lead exposure cost Americans an estimated 824 million IQ points, or 2.6 points per person on average. Wow. And, you know, it was more for people who were born in the 1960s and 70s. That includes me, when lead gas was skyrocketing. And then the IQ loss was estimated to be as high as 6 to 7 points. And it was really inhaling auto exhaust. So, you know, we can inhale it in our air pollution. We can pick up a paint chip. There can be lead in the dust. Sometimes there's lead in the pipes that bring water to our home, and we don't necessarily know where that lead is. So I always encourage people who have young children or pregnant women to get their water tasted at the tap. It's not enough to just look at the municipality, because babies, of course, who are, for example, drinking infant formula, they drink a lot of water. And so 40 to 60% of their exposure to lead is actually by drinking infant formula with contaminated water.
Something related, elevated not only lead, but chromium levels in cinnamon applesauce pouches, and some of those were actually recalled by the FDA.
Right. So this is, I think, a super sad example. This just happened at the end of 2023, that some families had their children tested, and it is routine for kids to be tested at 1 and sometimes at 2 years of age. This is a little finger prick. It's not them having to go to the lab and have their blood drawn. They just take a drop of blood from the end of the finger, and they check kids' lead levels. And they found these kids who had sky high lead levels. And then they did an investigation to try and figure out, well, where is that lead coming from? Because, you know, it was really unclear. The house was built in, you know, after that rule that you couldn't have lead paint, and the families, you know, the parents weren't in an occupation where they might be exposed to lead. And they looked at the family diet, and it all seemed okay. And then there was just one thing that the kids ate that the parents didn't. And those were these pouches of applesauce that were cinnamon flavored. Mm. And cut to the chase, the cinnamon had lead in it. And, you know, there's two reasons, lead chromate to be specific. One is that if you put in something like chromate, then you bulk up the spice, and so it you get more money. It makes it a less expensive product for the company to make. Yeah. But the lead is actually to make the cinnamon look brighter, and so it wasn't an accident. It was intentional that this lead chromate was added, but it was devastating for the families whose kids were exposed to this and who have high lead levels.
Take a quick question on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Roberta, go ahead. You're with Dr. Mazes.
Thank you. Dr. Mazes, I heard on the news that chocolate has lead in it, and Trader Joe's has the most. Is there any that doesn't have it, especially organic chocolate? I was told that didn't make any difference.
Thank you, Roberta.
So you are absolutely right, Roberta. There is lead in some but not all chocolate. And I am not going to be able to give you the list of the safest chocolates off the top of my head, but I will tell you that Consumer Reports did do a review, and there are some chocolates where it was really quite high, and it would be probably best not to purchase those. And there were others that actually had quite low lead levels. So I would say if you go to Consumer Reports, two that I remember just off the top of my head from when that came out was there was a brand called Divine, 70% deliciously smooth dark chocolate that did well, and another Sam's Choice, which is sold at Walmart, that had a dark chocolate, 85% cocoa, and they had lead levels that were below the level of concern. I'll also say to listeners that milk chocolate, while it's not as healthy as dark chocolate, was not a concern because, of course, milk chocolate doesn't have as much dark chocolate in it. But this is something, especially if you're like me, if you're someone who loves chocolate, you may want to do a little bit of research to figure out, well, which are the safest kinds of chocolate to be eating.
Very good information. Thank you for Roberta for bringing that into the conversation. Let's take a break right here. We'll be back with Dr. Mazes right after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you. We send so many of our listeners over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. That's a pretty area of New Mexico. It's the southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment. It's only about a three-hour drive from the Metro Tucson area. I know you'll have a good time over there, especially if you like outdoor activities like hiking. The Gila National Wilderness is right there, and also the Cliff Dwellings National Monument is just north of Silver City. So there's lots to do. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted by all the activities listed there on the website, and also some great places to stay and eat as well in historic, some great Victorian architecture in historic Silver City. We continue now our conversation with Dr. Victoria Mays, is the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. She's also a professor of medicine and public health at the UA. Dr. Mays, this interesting piece in the Washington Post that ultra-processed foods, these aren't just processed food, these are highly processed foods, could be linked to, I think they're saying, 32 health problems. Wow.
Yeah, I think this is one of those breaking stories, although it's been breaking for a few years now, about how dangerous, that's a strong word, how dangerous to our health ultra-processed food is. And the tricky part is that people don't know necessarily what that means. So the most esteemed way of defining it came from Brazil. It's called the NOVA classification. And they say ultra-processed products are formulations of ingredients, mostly of exclusive industrial use, typically created by a series of industrial techniques and processes. Wow, that's kind of hard to understand.
That does not sound appetizing. That does not sound very appetizing to me.
Right, exactly. I just read a book recently called Ultra-Processed People. And, you know, once again, there in the title, they pointed to the fact that these shouldn't really be called foods. They should be called food-like substances because they really are so different from raw and whole foods. And so we have growing research to show that when you eat more ultra-processed food, it increases your risk of heart disease, diabetes, cancer. It increases your risk of metabolic problems like being overweight or having pre-diabetes. It increases your risk of gut diseases like irritable bowel or inflammatory bowel disease. It even increases your risk of depression and anxiety. So these are not healthy foods to be eating. And yet, as a country, 58% of our food is coming from ultra-processed food.
Wow. Could you give us some examples of what are would be some well-known kind of ultra-processed foods?
Yes. So some of it's surprising because it has to do with the ingredients in the food. So, for example, you can get a loaf of bread from a bakery that's got flour and salt and yeast and maybe nothing else. Or maybe it's got some seeds. Maybe it's got some egg in it if it's kind of a richer bread. But when you buy a bread that sits on the shelf of the grocery store, which may be created to have a very long shelf life, it can have modified starches. It could have unusual oils and fats. It could have emulsifiers. It could have other kinds of preservatives. And these chemicals are not our friends.
Well, yeah, I've wondered about that at the supermarket. Sometimes you see, the bread just seems to, some of those breads can sit out there for days, and they still look, they look fresh.
Right. Right. And so they're designed to have a very long shelf life. And they're designed by adding these chemicals that are stabilizers, food stabilizers. They're sometimes artificial sweeteners, artificial colors, you know, other kinds of chemicals that are added to the food that give it a very long shelf life. But unfortunately, they have these very dangerous effects. And this is so interesting to me. Some of the reason these chemicals are added are to actually make the foods tastier. And it has been found that when people eat ultra-processed food, they eat it faster. This may be because it doesn't take as much chewing. Some people, I know it's lunchtime, but some people say that ultra-processed food, it's almost like the food has been pre-chewed. It's very soft.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about eating a piece of meat where you have to really chew through it, if you think about eating nuts or seeds or a whole apple or a carrot, you know, it takes some work for your jaw to crunch on that and break through the structure of the food. You know, if you think about, you know, again, let's just go back to a piece of bread. It's very soft. It very quickly just turns into a piece of paste in your mouth.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that crust that a loaf of bakery bread would have that you have to bite through and chew on.
Wow. Sounds like maybe a good commercial for Steve and the team up at Mona's Danish Bakery.
I think there's a real difference between fresh food, you know, and you know, my guess is that your friends at the bakery sometimes worry about that the bread may not last as long as that loaf you buy from the grocery store, which could last for maybe weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is a fresh food. It is not a highly processed food.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some store-bought hamburger buns that do kind of, they feel, they're so soft and they're light as air, basically. And it does kind of seem kind of weird, like maybe it's like pre-chewed or something. I mean, it's weird.
Well, that's exactly right. So I think it is worthwhile for all of us to consider how much ultra-processed food we're eating and where we might want to make changes. So this doesn't mean that you can't ever go to a restaurant. It doesn't mean that you can't ever, you know, buy things that are prepared in a store. But, you know, the packaged things that when you look at the ingredient list are full of emulsifiers and modified this and modified that and artificial colors and flavors, those are the ones you probably want to avoid.
All right, Dr. Mays, it's always a pleasure, and we will catch up with you next month. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, Dr. Victoria Mays is the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine over at the University of Arizona. And you can find more out about Dr. Mays on her website, integrativemedicine.arizona.edu. You can also follow her on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dr. Mays's. And of course, she's doing a very popular podcast now with Dr. Andrew Weil called Body of Wonder. All right, that will do it for the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, as usual, on the other side of the glass. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well and reminding you that tomorrow we've got Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie will be our lead-off interview tomorrow. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.